Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 95 for August the 11th, 2015. I'm your host, Jack, and once again, I'm here to guide you through all this magical world of servers, switches, fiber optics, and all things interconnected. Looks like my levels are a little bit up there. We're going to bring those down just a little bit more, right about there. That looks pretty good. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's there. Check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. We're also, as you know, syndicated across Stitcher.com. That's STITCHER.com, where you can pick up this show and many other podcasts and genres. And I recommend that you go out there and listen to a lot of different podcasts, folks. Don't get wrapped up in just, you know, just the tech world. There's many things to listen to. You can download their app today on your smartphone, either iOS or Android. And once again, that is Stitcher.com. Please check out our website, and I hope you do. Many of you have lately. You've been leaving some great comments and some suggestions for, you know, some future shows, and that's always a good thing. Check it out at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can also comment on these shows, and I hope that you do that. Please leave us a voice message. Pick up that phone. You know, hearing your voice over a podcast when you're in the car is just an amazing, amazing, like, ego boost. You're like, wow, that's me. Jack put me on the show. And I definitely will. Pick up the phone and dial 724-701-0550. I also post that number with every single show. So if you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, you can find that phone number, because I know you're in your car right now, you're riding to work, or you're listening with a pair of headphones at work, and you're like, what was that number? Well, check out the website, and you can pick up that number and give me a call. If you have any questions or future ideas for shows, we would love to hear from you here at the studio. Just email it to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And also follow me on Twitter for some great tech tips through the week. And that's at Technoman. Folks, we're going to begin this week with an email I received from Jeff. And Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to type this email on. I know everybody is quite busy out there in the networking world. And I know that a lot of us have a lot of things going on. But, you know, it's great to get this feedback, and I really enjoy reading your emails, and I enjoy being able to put them on the show. So this is going to be a little bit of insight into their network and what they are doing at their shop, and it's also going to be a little bit of the topic from last week's show about Windows 10, and I got a little story I'll give you after this email about my personal experiences with Windows 10, the greatest, easiest, intriguing Windows yet. Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you that here in just a little bit. So here's the email from Jeff. Let's start with the first part here, and then we'll go into the second part. One of my IT staff installed Windows 10 on his work PC. Like I told you, my partner did at work. We used vSphere 5.5, and the client is still working fine. I am taking the plunge today. We found a critical issue in the general population here is that our quality department has very old software, and that we use virtual XP mode on Windows 7 to virtualize the applications. No such animal on Windows 8, 8.1, or 10. My staff person uses Hyper-V on his desktop, and I use VMware Workstation. But we have kept all users of the quality software to Windows 7. The quality department is in the process of upgrading to a different software offering, but it will be months before the complete and the transition. So let's start there. Let's start with Jeff's plunge, and I can't wait to hear. I hope you email me back, Jeff, and let me know how it went for you, because at the end I'm going to tell you how it went for me. But and we're not beating a dead horse here, folks, with Windows 10. I'm not beating it up. If you've installed it and it works great, you know, absolutely perfect. My partner, you know, after 6 or 7 attempts, his PC seems to be running fine. We found there was a bad Windows, a video driver, and he took care of that issue, and it seems to be working absolutely flawlessly for him. So the first thing you're saying is virtualization, and you bring up a great topic here that I talked about last week. A lot of times with native software, a lot of companies have specialized software. I know I've written a lot of it in the past for companies. I've written very proprietary software for companies that they've used and they're still using today. There is some problems with that. Like the first program I wrote was a DOS-based program with ANSI-based graphics. Now, if you don't know what that is, kind of Google it, and you'll get the idea what ANSI-based graphics is. It was a bear because you had to use XY coordinates to place a cursor on the screen, and you're basically just putting it not in a text box, just over a text box. So it's like putting a cursor over a picture and typing your text. So you have to know where those are. So it's all like just a bunch of visual magic is what ANSI graphics was. So that application obviously would no longer work on pretty much any PC today, unless you have an old DOS machine laying around somewhere that you can maybe load that up on and maybe still use it. Maybe they are. I've lost touch with that company years ago. Well, it's also a thing that, you know, they never paid me the balance of the software because, you know, if you go into a job, you don't have a contract. Good luck. Once again, that's a bad thing to do. We could talk about contracts one day all you want. If you're doing some consulting work, that might be something that, you know, that you might want to actually think about. But anyway, we're not talking about that tonight. So using, and I didn't know that the XP mode is on Windows 7, and I kind of figured, Jeff, that it wouldn't be on 8, 8.1. We played around with 8.1 a little bit. We didn't experiment too much with it. But I would definitely figure they didn't put it out in 10 because, as you know, XP has the end of life. And once it's end of life, why would you even support a virtual mode of it? Because you're still going to have to do some programming around the back end to keep it, you know, to keep it fresh and keep it updated. So I understand what you're saying there. And I think, you know, I'm pretty sure that in your company, in your situation, as in many out there, many manufacturing companies still is using a XP. I know one manufacturing company, you know, still using 95, but that computer is used to run some big machinery. It's kind of an embedded type of a deal where it's embedded into the machine, and there's no need to upgrade it because it's not connected to the internet or anything. So as long as it's functioning in that software and doing its job, then, you know, the embedding is going to work. If you did upgrade that and you did change that software out, you know, to a newer version of Windows, you're just going to have all kind of critical errors and critical problems. It's probably not worth doing that. Now, you also talked in the end here about upgrading different software offerings, but it's going to be months in transition. And the truth of that is many companies out there, if they're not a Microsoft partner, they don't get that initial offering of Windows 10 or Windows 8.1 to say, hey, look, Here's the operating system. We're going to be coming out with this in, say, October or July this year, how they came out with 10. Maybe they'll give it to you a year prior and say, hey, get your software up to snuff. Get everything running. You know, if you're a little Joe Bob software company like I was at one time, writing software at home, you know, staying up late nights. I used to, you know, when I smoked, I would go through a pack of cigarettes a night, mostly burning them out in the ashtray. And if you've ever smoked and worked on a computer, you know what I'm talking about. You light the cigarette up, you lay it in the ashtray, you know, you go to get a sip of your beer and it would be stone warm, you know, like it just came out of a fire somewhere. And that's the gift of programming. When you see those TV shows and you see those programmers eating pizza, you know, sitting in front of the computer for hours on ends, like it would be nothing for me to do a 14-hour day on a software project and never leave except to go maybe to the restroom or to grab another cold beer because your other one's warm. So Microsoft never offered that to me. They never called and said, hey, Jack, you know, we know you're writing proprietary software that runs on our Windows. We want to give you a copy. They're not going to do that. You know, now, if you're somebody like Quicken, QuickBooks or something like that, a big company, big corporation, big name, maybe something like a Photoshop, like Adobe. Yeah, those companies are going to get the initial offering and they are going to build their software product up to run on the new operating systems. That's just what they do, and it's going to work rather well. So, you know, my partner at work always says one thing. He always said companies are not in business to not make money. And if I'm a software vendor, if I'm Adobe and I'm like, hey, you know, I can make a brand new offering for Windows 10. And if it's just a patch to make it work, maybe I'll give it away free. But chances are they're going to make you buy a new version of their software because they're in business to make money. So that's how that works. So apparently, if you're telling me it's going to take months to complete the transition into your new software, it's probably a smaller software vendor that you're working with. And you know, that's quite okay. Even some of the bigger software vendors, they're like, we're tired of upgrading our software. Well, guess what, folks? You're going to be out of business because if you don't keep up with the times, then you move back to the Stone Age and you're no longer in business. Next thing you know, you no longer have any income coming in. You can't feed the children. The wife divorces you, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, your cars are getting repossessed. Your house is getting foreclosed on because you don't want to stay with the current times. So don't do that. Companies out there writing software, get on the ball. Get your software tested. Work with Windows 10. Do some in-house testing first. Make sure everything works sufficiently and then push it out. So an 8.1 was a whole nother beast. We found pretty much all the software that we're using in-house always seems to just work because most applications in education nowadays, we're kind of fortunate because most of it is hosted outside, even outside of our network in the cloud. And that word is so overused nowadays, it's just pathetic. But anyway, so it's hosted somewhere else, and our applications just seem to work because most of them are web-based. So as long as we keep current web, you know, web browsers. But look how many times... if you listen to Mike Smith's tech show, you know, the Mike Tech Show, he tells you many times he's running an older version of Internet Explorer on some people's computers because even the hosted companies don't upgrade fast enough or stay current enough to work with the newer browsers. And we do find that happening once in a while. But the underlying operating system don't really matter a whole lot to us nowadays. So yeah, it's going to take you a little while to transition your software, but when you do, I'm sure it's going to work just fine. So let's go into the second part of this email. If you remember, I don't know exactly when I had that show out, when I talked about this, but we were talking about how do you back up your virtual machines, because this is a real problem for us. I've never found a really great way to back up my virtual machines and to be able to get those machines, you know, so I feel 100% confident that those machines are backed up every day. So it seems like Jeff has a solution, and I'm going to read you his solution. I also have a few QNAP NAS devices as iSCSI targets to back up my virtual servers. You must right-click on the running server and choose Clone. For the location, choose the ESXi server and the data store that is located on the iSCSI target for the QNAP. I then name them Z server clone. I use a small letter Z so that they show up at the end of the list of servers. Be sure not to check shut down the running host and also not check to boot up the clone. I use this daily on about 19 servers. Every week, I start out by deleting the old clone and making a new one. I also have three of the active servers that we tweaked settings in the OS as they would not boot. We just deleted them and moved the clones to the data store. Then we boot them up and start them running. One out of three were detected as a different server in the domain. We had to take it out of the domain and put it back in and reestablish the trust relationship. Now, there is a possibility why that is happening, I would think, is if the other clone is still running, we know we can't have two computers on our network with the same name. They can't. We ran into that just cloning workstations because we make one clone of a workstation. If that workstation's on and we bring up the other one, then it does fall off the domain and the trust relationship is broken. We have to rename it and reestablish that connection. So that may be happening. Now here, Jeff, and I'm not knocking what you're doing. I mean, you're doing a fantastic job. You obviously have a solution to what you're doing. But my solution is what I'm looking for is I need a hands-off solution. Like our backups at night. I told everybody here we run Barracuda Backup. I absolutely love Barracuda. They're not a sponsor of the show. I'm just telling you from my personal experience, I've been using Barracuda now for at least the past 5 years that I can guarantee you. And I sleep pretty good at night, knowing that all of our data is backed up, all of our SQL databases get backed up, all of our clients, all their files and everything, they get backed up every night. But what we don't back up is the virtual server, that file that we need to back up. So the way we used to do our backups, Jeff, and everybody else out there listening, obviously, is we used to use tape backups. Now, tape backup is probably one of the oldest, the worst, the absolute nastiest backup solution you could even have. If you have tapes in your network right now, rip them out, put them in a big fire, and just burn them up. Because there's issues with tapes, folks. The first issue, you must remember before you leave work to change your tape, okay? You must, and some people never change their tape. They just let the daily backup just overwrite yesterday's backup. Well, you know, what happens if, let's say Wednesday, somebody deleted a file on Monday, and now they want it back on Wednesday, but you overwrote that tape already three times. So the true backup strategy is at least 14 tapes. I liked when we did 14 tapes. So you have 7 days and then 7 days. And then you can overwrite the first 7 days and you still got the last week to go back to. There's another issue with tapes, folks. Every time you put a tape in that cassette or in that recorder or whatever, folks, cassette tapes have been gone out of industry, out of the world of music for how many years? You know, and that's kind of where the tape backup went. I know you're going to, I should receive a ton of emails from you out there. People use them. Jack, they work really good. We use this backup system, this, you know, C backup or whatever. And they work absolutely flawlessly. But it always seemed to me whenever somebody did want me to recover something, I would put the tape in and it would say wrong data set. And then I would try the next tape, wrong data set. What the heck data set is it looking for? It doesn't give you any indicator. It just comes up in the software and says wrong data set. So whatever that means, I don't know. We never, absolutely, positively, I can tell you, we never recovered anything back from them tapes that we put on them. So it's a very false sense of security. Even if you have, and one time we bought one of the tape cassette stacks. So it would hold five tapes, and it would go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and so forth and so on. So the next thing that you got to worry about with tape backup is, like you're talking here, Jeff, is the hands-on. You apparently have to do this by hand. You got to right-click on the server, and you say clone it. And if we can create a script, if somebody out there can write a script that says clone my servers, and it would just do what you're doing automatically with a task manager at night, and say it's running at midnight at night, and it boom, 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 makes all those, maybe deletes the old ones after 3 days or whatever, however you would work that out. I think that may be the perfect solution. What you're doing, Jeff, is fine. I'm so glad you emailed me, and I'm not bashing you by any means. I'm just saying that this wouldn't really work in our situation because there's only two of us. We handle 700 computers. We handle roughly 1,300 users, end users. We're working on desktops every day, laptops. And we're doing our server upgrades, checking server updates once a week to see what's out there. So to be able to sit and actually do this and make sure I have these manually would be a very, very hard thing to do for me. So, again, I'm not saying what you're doing is bad, just won't work for us. I think it's working for you, obviously. You have a backup, you have a clone of your machine, and that's fantastic. The one thing we did try that did seem to work for us is we were able to shut the machine down. We can shut the virtual server down, and we can clone it out. And we cloned it to a external hard drive to have those. Kind of the same situation you did, but we would do it, maybe two or three times a year just to have that machine to bring it back up. Because as I said, I know the Barracuda is backing up the data. So if I lose a running application, if I lose a running server-based application, I'm really not as concerned with that as losing the data itself. And I'm sure you guys are the same situation there. If you have SQL databases, you definitely want to back up those data sets and all those tables and everything and get those backed up because I can rebuild a machine. I can rebring a virtual machine back up in about, give or take, 15 minutes. And that's on the outside. Most times it's maybe 10. Because we have them, all we do is kind of copy it to a new server. We rename it. We give it the IP address, the same IP address as what the other server had, and we can reestablish all that and bring that back up. The only virtual servers that I'm truly concerned about is my Active Directory domain controller, because, you know, that has all your user database in there. It has all your user accounts. And like I said, even our, we call it our file server, even the file server itself, the files are backed up. So reestablishing that, reestablishing shares, I don't think that would be that big of a deal for us. We can have that back up probably in the outside of maybe an hour, reestablishing all the shares. Copying the files back from Barracuda back into those shares wouldn't be a big deal, and everybody would have their files back. So let's go back and talk just for a second about that backup solution I was telling you about, tapes. Tapes versus the Barracuda. The way the Barracuda works, the Barracuda is actually backing up the actual file. So if I go to Barracuda, and I could be in Zimbabwe, I could be in Alaska, anywhere I have an internet connection to my laptop, I can open it up, and I've done it. I've been on vacation in Florida, and you guys know, if you don't know, I live in Pennsylvania, and I had a phone call. A panicked worker just absolutely panicked, and she said, "Jack, I deleted this file, and I really need it today. I got to do this presentation, and I don't know why I deleted it, but I need it back." Well, I was able to open my laptop in a hotel room, go to Barracuda, and say, "Reestablish this file in its original location." And it went back into our server in the rack, because Barracuda, they sell you a server that goes in your rack. So it's stored locally, plus it's stored to two offsite locations. So the offsite location where I was obviously working tells the local backup to put it back into the file share. It put it back in within like 2 seconds. She had the file back. She was absolutely thrilled to death that that file was back, and she was able to go about her job. So if I had tapes, I don't know what I would have did. At that time, I was a single man shop. I guess I would have had, you know, do you fly back from Florida, leave your family there? It would have been just a pure mess. And I probably would have told her there's really nothing I could do at that point. So I think I'm better in touch with Barracuda as far as where my files are, you know, where they're residing, and being able to get those files immediately back onto the file shares than I would be a tape backup. I just don't think that would work out too well. So I just wanted to give you that backstory about why I'm such a Barracuda fan, why it works. And again, like I said, they don't give me anything for saying that, but I like to share information with you folks listening to this podcast. You know, I started this podcast some time ago to kind of pay it forward. You know, like I said, I've been doing this business. I've been in networking and servers and computers for just about almost close to 30 years. So I like to pay it back a little bit, give it back to you folks, and, you know, share what information I have, what knowledge I have. But in return, I'd like you to give me knowledge like this. Give me knowledge back, because I learn from you as much as you can maybe learn from me, if you're learning anything at all, or it's just something to listen to in your car on the way to work. I don't know. So the last part of this particular email, just kind of asking some personal stuff, I guess. I'm going to put it out there because maybe you guys are thinking about doing this. And we've talked about before at work. I'm planning on getting a camera to videotape part of this process and put on YouTube in the future. As you have experience in this area, do you recommend any cameras that would be usable for YouTube recording for a beginner? Pretty much, Jeff, any camera that you can buy. I've done YouTube videos before. I've done them with my iPhone. You can do them with your Android phone. You can record a video. Save that video. You can also, I also bought, I do, and I don't know if you guys know or not, but I do a photography show. If you, matter of fact, if you go to 42 Technoman or search for Jack's Tech Corner on YouTube, you'll see a ton of photography videos on there along with my server videos. So if you watch any of my server videos, they're kind of all balked on that one channel. And I bought a Canon camcorder, and I paid a good penny for it. It's an HD camcorder. It's a pretty good one, but it's not high end by any means. You know, it's under it would be under $1,000. And the reason I bought that, Jeff, is because it has external microphone port. The biggest thing with YouTube videos, with anybody putting videos on YouTube, if you're thinking of doing this, if you're recording your screen and you're doing screencasting and whatever, is your audio. If somebody can't hear you, they're going to bounce. And what bouncing is on YouTube means, and you've probably done it, I can't hear this. This sounds like crap. And you just bounce off it. You don't watch all of the video. So you bounced. And YouTube tracks that, because when I track my analytics, it tells me that somebody bounced and they're no longer watching it. That's why I put so much effort, so much time, so much money, as my wife will tell you, and so many resources into my audio gear to set the audio gear up for this podcast. You know, because if you can't hear me, then it's probably not worth listening to. If you're listening to a bunch of room noise, a bunch of echoes, again, probably not worth listening to. The worst thing on YouTube, Jeff, is don't ever do this. You know, explain what you're doing because you're teaching. If you watch my videos on YouTube on server and, you know, anything on networking I did, you learn that I like to teach by telling you. I've actually received many emails, you know, because you get the haters out there. I received many emails from YouTube watchers that say, you're boring. You go into too much detail. Just spit it out. What's wrong with you? Well, if I don't talk my way through it, like this podcast, if I don't talk and I just sit here and you get room noise, that's probably no good. Or if you shrink it down, like this is how you hook up network. Plug this cable into this port. You didn't learn anything, right? You need every step to kind of get there. So that's important. The one cardinal rule you don't do on YouTube, I'll tell anybody this. I've even been watching lately. A lot of you guys might have heard me say I started riding a motorcycle again this year, and I started a YouTube channel. It is called Harley Day Rider, all one word, where I ride a motorcycle and I talk about things, different things, right? Well, I watch guys that do these videos, and then they cut them to music. So they're just driving down the road, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yep, I just bounce. I get off of it. I want to listen to somebody telling me something. That's the entertaining part, not just riding down the road and seeing the scenery go by. That's not really my cup of tea. Same thing. That's why I started the photography videos, Jeff, is because those photography videos, when I started doing Photoshop Elements videos back some version 5 or 6 ago, a long time ago, the only thing I can find help with, I would go like, how do I clone something? And it was music. And somebody typing text on the screen. Well, you know, I don't want to watch that. You know what I mean? I want to hear audio. So that's why I bought that camcorder for the really good audio. But you can honestly use anything. They make a lot of microphones that plug into your iPhones. They make a lot of microphones that will plug into your Android phones. So you can use that to get started. They make tripod mounts for the iPhone. I have those here. They work really well. And make sure you buy yourself, if you're doing in-studio or in-house stuff or, you know, in your shop, whatever, buy yourself a lapel microphone. I found great ones on Amazon for about $15. They're wired. You don't need anything wireless. You just get a wired microphone. And the audio is crystal clear and it sounds nice. That's what you want, just something pleasing. So Jeff also finishes his email out with, keep up the good work. So we're going to keep up the good work here. We're going to bash Windows 10 some more. Nah, we're not going to bash Windows 10. It is what it is. It's a new release. It's brand new. Microsoft does not believe in quality assurance. They do not believe in testing in-house. They do not believe in, they rolled out all those betas and you sent in, I'm sure you sent stuff and said, oh, this needs change, that needs change, this needs fixed. I don't think anybody reads that stuff. They do that for the enjoyment of our benefit, like somebody's listening, but I don't think anybody reads it. I could be wrong, but that's my opinion. So anyway, when I loaded Windows 10 on my work computer, everything went pretty well. I did the online upgrade, you know, you type it, you click it, you know, and it kind of starts upgrading your computer. It rebooted and it started doing its thing. I thought, wow, this is pretty wonderful. It's going to actually work out really, really well. Well, we have a video card, an extra video card in our computers, and we have 3 monitors on our desk. Well, the first monitor came up, and my buddy works with me said, Jack, that's okay. You know, you probably need a video driver. So we loaded a video driver on it, and we used Windows 7 video driver, which worked for about an hour. And we went to lunch and came back. I noticed something. I noticed all 3 of my monitors were black. I couldn't wake it up. I kept hitting the key. I couldn't do anything. Nothing would wake it up. So after some playing around, removing the video card, plugging into the internal card, I got the one monitor back up so I can at least see what I was doing. And then he said, hey, Jack, I found a new video driver. Load this. Oh, great. I load the new video driver. Put my card back in, my video card, rebrought the computer back up. And then trying to reestablish that whole thing, It seemed to be working pretty good again. I thought, wow, I got Windows 10. I'm pretty happy. I put it on the domain. Everything went like according to plan, like it should. We were able to get to our file shares. We were able to load all of our software that we use in shop. Everything really, really worked until the next day. The next day I went in, I booted my computer up. I only had one monitor again. And I said, look, I can't keep doing this. We are too busy of a shop to be trying to fix something that's supposed to be the latest, the best, the greatest Windows ever invented. I can't fix it, all right? I can't do any more with this. So I went in to the help section. I went into the way Windows boots, and I found revert your computer to Windows 7. I thought, wow, that's it. That's the magic ticket. So, and I kept all my files and everything, so I hit refresh it back to Windows 7. Microsoft does this wonderful thing that you're going to find out if you have to refresh to Windows 7. So my computer restarted, and it said, please wait, reverting to Windows 7. So I did wait, and I waited about, give or take, 4 hours, I guess, total, to finally get it all done. It boots up. I log in. I said, wow, it looks perfect. Okay, the video drivers, again, were blown now because I had to put different video drivers, so I had to revert the video drivers, got all my monitors back up. Everything was looking good. So now I'm on Windows 7, and I'm pretty pleased. Well, I go to write a requisition out to order some parts that we needed. I go to open my Excel. It said, I'm sorry, your Excel is not activated. Please activate Excel. That doesn't even make sense. Why would the activation disappear? It was on there with Windows 7. It was activated. In Windows 10, I launched it, and it worked. And now it's no longer working again. So I said, that's okay. I'll reactivate it. Now, I reactivate on the exact same hardware, the exact same platform. I didn't change a thing on the computer. It came back and said, sorry, all your keys are used up. You no longer have any more Office 13 keys. Well, now there's a stickler. So I did find one of our, you know, our shop keys that we have, one of our bulk keys that we keep for the school. I put that in there, and I was able to reactivate it. But that was a nightmare, just trying to get Windows 10 to work. And I told my partner, I said, look, this is my take. And folks, and obviously Jeff is playing around with it, and they're seeing what they can do with it. If Microsoft does not make us happy, the technologists, the ones in the field out there, the ones in the ditches, the trenches, working in industry, working in education, if they cannot make it so we can load it, we are not going to roll it out. We are not going to put it in our companies. We are not going to aggravate our clients to the point where we are losing sleep at night, to the point where we are, you know, the ones getting yelled at every day because stuff is not working. It's just not worth it. We will be running Windows 7. We tried it on one of our library computers. I said, hey, partner, go out there and, you know, load up Windows 10 on that because we want the kids to see it. And I told you that last week. We want the kids to see the latest, greatest new stuff. And it got to 49% and quit for no apparent reason. Just quit. And that was on a Windows 8.1 box. So we clicked, you know, just stop it, cancel, reboot the computer, and it does still have Windows 8.1 on it. So it does work still. So, you know, again, if they can't make us happy and we're the industry leaders, we're the ones pushing this stuff out there. We are the ones that know how things work, and we can't make it work. There's a problem out there, Microsoft. And, you know, and I'm not bashing you by any means. I love you, Microsoft. I tell everybody, Bill Gates has made me a lot of money over the years because I've been a Windows guy since, almost 30 years. I'm still using it, still setting it up, still running Windows servers. So I'm not by any means bashing them. I'm just saying the quality of service is just not there. You know, it wasn't there when Ballmer was in there running it, and it's not in there now when this new Joe, whoever it is, running the company. It's still just not the quality that they need. I don't know what to do. And we even said maybe Microsoft needs to say, hey, you know, whatever company out there, Dell, whatever schools out there, you know, Harvard, we're going to send Microsoft representatives in to load all your computers and make them all work perfectly. Maybe that's what they need to do. Because I tell you, in our industry, what's going to happen is we're going to have an open house. Parents will come in, and they'll say, why aren't you running Windows 10? I would say, well, it just doesn't simply work. You know, and so that's going to give them a bad taste. They're not going to buy Windows 10 at home. They're not going to buy a Windows 10 computer to give to their kid to go to college. Although I think it's going to work just fine if you buy a new computer and it has Windows 10 on it. It's preloaded. I think it will work just fine. I don't think you'll have any troubles at all. But if you're upgrading machines, and our machines are 2 years old, I would be very, very leery of that. So that is my take on the whole entire Windows 10 thing. I'm not going to bash you anymore with that. But please, 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 Microsoft, if anybody's listening, call me up. Say, Jack, you know, what do you think we should do? And we'll have a little discussion about it. I mean, we will. I would love to interview somebody else from Microsoft and let me know what your quality service is. How are you going to help us, the industry leaders, to put this stuff out there to give people? And then I was told, my work partner says, Jack, look, they're coming out with server, I think he said 2016. I'm like, holy crap, you got to be kidding. You should not roll out new server versions maybe once every 5 years, because it's just not going to happen in the industry. We're not going to upgrade servers to make that boost, right? We just had to end 2003 because they're like, end of life, got to go. Well, we had to do that. But if it's something you want to do, you don't want to do that, believe me. So anyway, I quit beating a dead horse. I will. I'm sorry. I'll get off my soapbox now. Let me calm down. By the way, tonight's beer, I know you guys like to know this, is a Killian's Red. Killian's Red comes out of the Coors Brewing Company. They bought it many, many decades ago, and they're still brewing it with the original recipe. Once again, that's Killian's Irish Red. Wonderful beer. Okay, so folks, please remember to support this show. And how can you support this show? Yes, you can donate $1,000 per user, per listener. You could do that, but that's okay. That's not going to happen. I can't donate $1,000, so I'm just kidding. If you want to support this show, do it very easily. Just use my Amazon link. If you buy anything for your company, if you buy anything for your personal use, I mean, if you buy car wax for your car, you can use my Amazon link. Just go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, deactivate your ad blocker. I know we all use them, and you'll see the link there. Whenever you buy anything, click that link first. It doesn't cost you anything more, and it does help the show, and I do appreciate that wholeheartedly. The next thing you can do to support the show is take one of my courses. Many of you have. Thousands of people have taken these courses, and they all have given very, very positive feedback on these courses and said, Jack, we love the layout. We love the course. It was very easy, simplistic, easy to understand. And, you know, if you're a lifelong learner like I am, you want to keep learning. So these courses are either Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi Server, which we talked about tonight that Jeff is using, from install to administration. You can sign up for these courses if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Click on a little online class link at the top of the page and go in, set up, and take the course. I get many emails that says, Jack, when's your course to start? As soon as you click that link, as soon as you click through the little PayPal link there, whatever it is, you are activated, you are a user, you can start immediately. It could be 2 in the morning, you can say, I think I want to start learning. It can be, you know, in the afternoon. You can start learning in the afternoon. I don't have to be around. The courses are set up for you. Watch a video, take a 2 or 3 question quiz just so I can make sure you're doing okay. And once you complete this course, I will mail you a certificate, a great certificate for framing, great certificate for putting with your resumes. Once again, sign up for those at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. You can't go wrong, and you're going to be happy you did. Once you sign up, you're on that course for life. It's not like a 6-month deal. Whenever you need help, go back and watch the video and get some and brush up on your techniques. Folks, thank you so much for listening to me here. I do enjoy seeing all these numbers go up. You know, you see like 1,000 listeners, 1,500 listeners, 2,000 listeners. I love seeing that, and I love having you guys around. I said when I started this, if I had 5 people listening to me, it would be worth sharing the knowledge too. But you give me more ego. That's what you do. Kind of make my ego jump up and say, I did something great this week. I gave a little bit of knowledge away to help some people out. And that's what we want to do here. So make sure you use that number, pay it forward, bring it back to me. Give me some voicemails, give me those emails. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for subscribing. Thank you for downloading. And thank you for listening to me babbling on for, you know, about maybe almost 45 minutes now. I do appreciate that. Take care, everybody. I'll talk to you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.